Think for just a second about a map. Yes, I'm thinking a real physical map, one with land and sea, one with city names and landmarks, maybe even topography. Now, break it down. What are the components? What are the key elements that build it up? It's not just a picture with some random lines on it. Each line, each dot, each mark means something and is part of its own piece of the puzzle. And where things get real exciting is when you take that map and take all of those components and take them digital. This is GIS Address. Welcome to the second episode of GIS Address, a new podcast from the Scoop News Group podcast network. If you haven't heard the explanation of this podcast already, stop. Yes, stop right here and head back to our first episode where we explain the series and talk about the value of the GIO. There is still time. But on this show, today, we're going to dive into geographic information systems, how they work, why they're important, and in plain language, how they fit into the government technology, agency operations, and initiatives as we know it. Our goal here is to take some of the more complex topics of GIS and make them understandable, accessible, and actionable for the average government audience. Last episode, we talked about the importance and value of a GIO, someone to oversee and run a state government GIS organization. Today, we're getting down to the nitty-gritty. This podcast was created and has been organized in collaboration with the National States Geographic Information Council, commonly referred to as NISGIC. Stay with us here as we dive into geographic information systems here on our second episode of GIS Address. On today's episode, we'll talk about framework, data layers, all of those little elements I mentioned at the beginning of the show. We're going to talk about what these layers are, how they impact the day-to-day role of GIS practitioners in government, and where it's all headed next. Our guest today is someone who knows that process intimately. Gene Trobia is with us. He's currently a researcher at the Arizona State University, but was previously the state of Arizona's cartographer. Gene, thanks for joining GIS Address today.
Oh, thanks. Good to be here.
So, Gene, you know, we teased it at the beginning, but tell me, what are framework data layers? Why are they important to state government GIS leaders?
Framework data layers, as you kind of said in your intro, are things that are on a map, features that are on a map that make a map a map. And quite a few years ago, the federal government really figured out that they were spending a lot of money on GIS and tried to come up with what they called framework data layers and standardize what those data layers were and some things about what those data layers should contain as far as data. So initially they came up with several framework data layers. They were cadastral data, which is basically parcel data, digital ortho imagery, which is aerial photography, elevation, which is the terrain surface, think of it as contour lines or 3D models. Geodetic control, which is precise control that helps align GIS data. Government unit boundaries, who owns what at a national scale. Hydrography, which is water features like streams, rivers, lakes, and things like that. And transportation, which basically was the road network, but also could include rail and other things. Things that would at the time have been on a USGS quadrangle map.
A little bit deeper, Gene, you're an active member of NISGIC, the National States Geographic Information Council, and they're regularly involved and engaged in this topic. What's going on with organizations like NISGIC in the framework field? How are groups bringing people together to talk about this?
So framework data initially developed as guidelines for federal agencies, but as time moved on, the feds started looking at organizations and created the Federal Geographic Data Committee. And the FGDC created what they call and what framework data fits into, a framework of national spatial data infrastructure. So it started being tools that really could be used for the feds to be more cost-effective and how they created data and how it could be created by one agency and used by others. As that expanded, the FGDC invited a lot of state and local organizations to participate with them. NISCHIC was one of those organizations. There's others. ERISA comes to mind right off the bat. Over time, states and local governments started participating with FGDC and developing and coming up with what should framework data do and how could it be used to cost-effectively implement and facilitate GIS nationally. Over time, actually, the FGDC created the National Geospatial Advisory Committee, which is really made up of some federal agencies, but a lot of state, local, regional, private sector, and academic groups, which help them govern what framework data should be developed and how GIS can be facilitated more effectively nationally and all levels of government.
But what can framework enable state and local governments to do? How can coordination on this stuff really, really change the way that government works going forward?
The thing that I think, and a lot of people that I've worked with think, is and a mantra that NISCHIC uses a lot is build once, use many. So a couple of things. As framework data was originally developed, it really was more natural resource oriented and things that would be on a USGS quad data at a national level. As GIS has emerged as a useful tool for lots of government functions, that data has become more and more urban-based. So this the model that NGAC and NISCHIC and other organizations are really proposing is that a lot of the local data is the best data around, but it's not very standardized. State government is in a great position to standardize and integrate that data. And the feds, in a lot of cases, have developed federal standards. So the states have a target so that that data can be standardized and cross a lot of boundaries. It just doesn't end at your city, county, or state line. And then the feds can provide some resources to allow that to happen and then harvest that data and integrate it at a national level. And what's happening now is that private sector's starting to develop a lot of tools to improve the workflows and data streams and develop applications around standardized data. So each group, you know, gets to contribute what their strengths are to an overall kind of ecosystem of creating this national framework data. And the other thing is data isn't created generally for its own sake. It's really developed for a purpose. So agencies, governments, and private sector use it for, you know, business or program needs. And as this data is developed, what really happens is you can start developing applications that allow non-GIS types, professionals and other, you know, in their own fields, to use this data in a way that they don't have to understand GIS and can get information, visualize information, a lot of times in map form, but it doesn't have to be in map form, but visualize that information to make better decisions so that you're starting to really facilitate data-based decision-making.
You know, something that comes up in both the state government, federal government, and GIS circles is this idea of a national address database. It sounds like from what you're saying, Gene, that framework plays a huge role in that process. Can you tell me a little bit more?
That's a great question because I think addresses are just the most current implementation that shows why framework data can be really important and make a difference to just all kinds of organizations. The latest framework data theme to be authorized is addresses. And I was surprised to find out addresses weren't a framework theme already. But anyways, just a few years ago, addresses became another framework theme. And in the implementation of developing that address data has fallen into the two lead federal agencies, Department of Transportation and the Census Bureau, and they're working extensively with state, local, tribal stakeholders to develop a system that gets into this kind of the whole concept of build once and use many, is how can we take the best possible local data, because that's where address data is developed in the first place. How can we integrate it into regions or states and standardize it? And then how can it be fed to really be a cost-beneficial way for the federal agencies to use that data for things like the census or an all-roads network for the Department of Transportation and things like that. And while that happens, then that data, if the processes are right, for instance, in my state and in other states, the states provide editing tools and feedback mechanisms for working with locals so they can edit that data and have authoritative people at the local level say, oh, well, thanks, we caught that mistake, or no, that wasn't a mistake, or whatever. But there's feedback loops to constantly improve and update that data. Because address data is very dynamic. So it's a great model of from local through state to federal government and ultimately used by the private sector and the public that that gets all the stakeholders involved and really plays to their strengths.
Gene, unfortunately, I think that's all the time that we have today on this second episode here of GIS Address, but thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for the opportunity.
So that's that. Today we covered framework data layers, and over the coming weeks and months, we're going to dive into other pieces of the GIS puzzle and how it all comes together in a way that makes government work better. Thanks again to our guest, Gene Trebbia, for being on the show today, and our partner, NISGIC, the National States Geographic Information Council, for working with us together on this podcast. To our audience, come back next time for another episode of GIS Address.